This is Neijing Now, prioritizing well-being. Neijing is the vitality that shields us from disease. Neijing Now, demystifying medicine, cultivating resilience, empowering host resistance, prioritizing primary prevention. I'm Dr. Jayashree Chander. I welcome you to another short clip exploring Neijing Now. I'm speaking today with Professor Brad Mapes-Martin from the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. He's a professor of political science. Brad, welcome to Neijing Now.
Well, it's nice to be here.
I'd like to get your perspective on the economy under Obama over the last 4 years and what your projection is for the next 4 years.
Well, you know, that ends up being a pretty complicated question. In some ways, to think about the economy now, we want to go back and think about the economy really post-2003. What he has done in terms of a recovery seems to be a bit more hands-off, but there's steady improvement. It's not clear that that's going to stay over the next 4 years. I think it will, but a lot of it is dependent on what goes on in Europe. Now there's this discussion about sequestration, what's going to happen with the fiscal cliff. From what we saw in the election, not a lot was clarified about who's going to be able to get what done, although within 24 hours, we get interesting signs that there may actually be some movement.
What are those signs?
Well, I think the first sign may have been actually the comment by President Obama that he would like to speak with Mitt Romney some more, which is something of a more than just a gesture. There actually is some intent to draw on not maybe Mitt Romney's ideas directly, but on a perspective shared by Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney had ideas? I mean, clear ideas? I mean, clear communicable ideas?
Okay, so he represents a perspective, a more free market perspective, a lower taxation perspective, that it's not entirely clear from the outcome of the election, with the House still being held by Republicans, that perspective was repudiated. If it's not being repudiated, it's also not clear that it was fully supported, obviously, since Obama won re-election and the Senate did move closer to Democrats. It's difficult to interpret the election of Elizabeth Warren to senator as sort of a big push for a more laissez-faire government. At the same time, I think that's where the gesture is more meaningful. If the status quo remains, there will be gridlock and bad things will continue to happen.
What's your perspective on how we are actually measuring our economic progress?
As a professor of environmental policy, I tend to find that economic progress is oftentimes defined so narrowly as to exclude especially long-term effects, but even really effects that aren't easily monetized.
Can you explain what you mean?
If we take, for example, the value of clean drinking water, right? The problem is, how do you calculate the value of a waterway? I suspect in California, that issue is going to be front and center over the next 30 years. What does it mean to be losing or to see the degradation of snowpack in the Sierras, especially given that the cost of water is so low as, you know, when it comes out of the tap? That's not an accurate representation of what that water will be worth. Because we can't easily monetize it, we don't count it.
Why aren't we measuring the value of that in the same way that we measure another fluid that comes out of the earth, namely oil? What's the problem in creating a quantitative measure?
That's a great question. First of all, let me say that I agree entirely with the premise of the question, that there's no real good reason for this failing, and that it is possible to do so, insofar as it's possible to calculate the future price of oil. I think in part we don't see it with fresh water because we don't want to see it with fresh water.
Say more. What do you mean we don't want to?
Without the sense of direct individual or private enterprise profit from water, we're left with sort of this question of, well, how do we base a measurement for something that we don't have a private market in? As a public utility, water's price is really unreflective of its value, so to speak.
As a society, as a globe, we so far think of water as a human right and that accessibility to fresh water should be fairly and equitably distributed, sort of. So there isn't profit to be made on water, so there's no incentive to calculate its monetary value. Now, I'm sure you're well aware that there is a movement to privatize water, in which case suddenly we're going to get some hard numbers that will also impact who gets to drink fresh water and how clean that water is.
I'm completely aware of the movement you're speaking of, and it's worrisome. I think it rests in some ways on framing the problems presented by water in correct terms. If we frame it, as you suggest, as a human right, those numbers are really quite irrelevant. we can talk about the value of water in terms of private profitability and yet get nowhere in terms of understanding them as a human right, in terms of understanding an equitable, fair distribution of them based on that.
So we're using water as an example of something that is difficult to calculate in the measurement of our progress, our growth, our development as an economy. There are other factors similar to water, such as the quality of our air, the quality of our social connections, the equitability in society, access to leisure time, access to creativity, the potential for each of us to develop ourselves to our full potential. These are all things that are incredibly important in measuring how well we're doing as an economy and as a society, and yet they're not being measured as we take stock of how our economy is growing.
You know, amongst the alternative measures, the one that I've found most compelling has been, I believe it was developed by Amartya Sen and Martha Nussbaum, the Human Development Index. And I find that given their philosophical differences, that recommends this approach all the more.
Can you explain, first of all, what the differences are in their approaches, and then also what is the Human Development Index?
Amartya Sen approaches the problem of human development through a utilitarian framework that in many cases seems to be the same approximate utilitarian assumptions that lead to trying to monetize and quantify a number of development factors. But given his work, for instance, on famines and the role of distribution as an amplifying effect to natural disasters, for instance, his way of coming at human development is to talk about how it is that our sense of freedom is premised upon certain levels of development that must occur. Martha Nussbaum, on the other hand.
Before you move on to Nussbaum, what do you mean when you say he's got a utilitarian view of human development?
So the set of assumptions that he brings to defining his problem are grounded in a larger philosophical argument about how to maximize happiness, how to get the greatest amount of happiness for the greatest number of people.
How does he measure that? How does he measure happiness?
That ends up being the big question. And the Human Development Index actually gets at how to do that. And I think that's where Martha Nussbaum adds in the remaining components that allow us to have a sense of not just numbers that maximize, but a sense of the quality of life that's lived by one who has, and I won't even say maximized happiness, but a minimum threshold of happiness. And that this minimum threshold comes to define the rights that we attach to things like the use of water and the quality of air. And to give her due, she expands it far beyond simple environmental factors into literacy, educational opportunities, parity between men and women society. In recent years, she's gone even further talking about disability. And I find her arguments to be very compelling in terms of how she comes to understand human capability.
Tell me more about her concepts.
So, and this is digressing a bit from the Human Development Index, because I know that that was not her stopping point. She's developed beyond just that approach. The gist of her argument is that if we want to talk about a human life having meaning and having meaningful attachment to a sense of freedom, what we're talking about is the way in which I seek to fulfill opportunities granted by my natural composition. What makes her argument, I think, impressive is the way in which she works to keep differences in people's bodily composition, mental faculties, at the forefront of her thinking about what it means to be human. The reason I tend to favor her over even Amartya Sen and his approach is the more robust picture she has of who a person is and what it is that they need, so that she ties in affects, love, imagination, play. These are parts for her of what make human life worth living. When I say worth living, I don't mean maximize, but as a minimum, you must have meaningful relationships, intimate relationships. I'm intrigued and drawn in by that sense of the possibilities inherent in a life.
Ah, it's really inspiring and beautiful.
I find that a lot of her work has been very inspiring for me.
It's also very basic, I think. It's also very instinctual and very common sense. And yet I feel like those concepts are not being accounted for as we embark on recovering our economy.
I think you'd be exactly correct. And there are two points of divergence here. She takes her bearings from Aristotle, from his general assumptions about the inherent orientation of people to social and political life. The second point, in more modern terms, has been this debate about a communitarian or more individualistic approach. And that communitarian approach is still informing the views of Barack Obama, the views of, for lack of a better term, the left.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you explain what does development as freedom mean to you?
Unfortunately, I continue to go at the problem through Nussbaum's eyes.
Fair enough.
To put my views in place of Sen's, it would be to say that the underlying idea to this is a sense of what it means to flourish. There's a lack of that discussion in our economic concepts within the United States. There seems to be almost the lack of vocabulary to talk about flourishing. I find lots of parallels here in having taught Thomas Hobbes, John Locke, to double back to a point we talked about much earlier with water resources and the bigger sense of tragedies of the common. It's one of the failings of framing the problem like Thomas Hobbes, right? Which is that in Hobbes's sense, there are no norms developed because there are no social bonds. Those social bonds are a source of human flourishing, and they're not the only source. The part of the vocabulary that we have in our economic dialogue is heavily weighted towards those moments of flourishing that come from choice and that come from a sense of freedom defined in that sense, but have really lost the ability to talk about flourishing that comes out of connections with other people. I mean, we saw this during the presidential campaigns, this notion of we built it. The bigger point that was being made here was about interdependence.
Absolutely. So given that the Human Development Index has been around for quite some time now, what are the obstacles to adopting that as our measure of economic growth versus our dependence on the GDP?
I see the obstacles as very insignificant. If what we mean by what are the obstacles, what are the resources that we need to do so, it's a conceptual matter. So it's not an expensive thing to think in these terms. It doesn't cost us anything to think differently.
Well said.
And so there are, in that sense, the obstacles are insignificant. And yet, in that same sense, they're deeply entrenched.
We've been talking primarily in the context of the United States. What I also see is internationally, we have India as a booming economy and China, and that I'm not an economist and I'm not a political scientist, I'm not an anthropologist or a sociologist, but I'm a physician. And I'm concerned with the well-being of people. And what I see is that the development path that these countries are taking, China and India, the main examples, is not taking into account Human Development Index or the Genuine Progress Indicator or the happiness and well-being of people. Jobs are being created, granted. Even high-paying jobs are being created. But this thing that we're speaking about, Nussbaum's concepts and development as freedom, the whole world is sort of following a path that is quick and easy, but ultimately unsatisfying.
In terms of the international aspects of development, I think to take India and China as examples, that the pressures on them to develop along a very particular model, those pressures are quite significant. For instance, climate change is going to force this discussion. A resource-intensive, unsustainable model of development creates a very important opportunity to have that discussion about what are we aiming to.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. Climate change is a huge impending pressure on all of us to develop differently. I'd add to that depression as a worldwide epidemic. You know, depression is the leading cause of disability-adjusted life years. It's a huge problem all over the world, particularly in America. We really need to consider our individual and collective health and happiness as we take a development path. How would you like to see Obama lead us as a nation and as a world in the next 4 years?
Internationally, to reintroduce the big ideas of climate change, I think that would be a good start and within his powers. The national level, I think there's actually something that needs to be done to depoliticize our identities a bit, to take politics out of being such a strong sense of who we are that in some ways inhibits our ability to talk across political differences. At some point, someone has to aim some energy at that, and he's in a position to do that and to be heard while doing it.
Great. You're advocating for bringing climate change to the table, the national and international table, and depoliticizing our domestic conversation.
Yes, which may be asking for a conflicting thing, considering how divisive climate change has become.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I guess there's just one thing that I would point to, and that is I find it interesting that the most recent financial crisis was tied to the housing market. I thought a point that was glossed over, and that is that the home had become a house, and the house had become an investment. And that shift in language and that shift in meaning, it signaled a real loss about how we think of ourselves and our place. When you think of the house as an investment to be built, to be sold, and resold, it's not clear what meaning would be attached to it. That's where I've started, is to focus on a sense of development that is built on trying to hold at bay those things that tear down the home. In the U.S., political discourse doesn't have an agreed upon sense of what the home is, and that is a strength, regardless of the form of the family. And I don't want to tie home strictly to family, but there needs to be some sense of a place to go to sort of recharge, to reconnect.
I agree with you. The concept of the home is incredibly nourishing and important.
And I think it goes back to the sense of flourishing. You know, there used to be the sense of behind every great, insert whatever gender you wish, the idea that you went back to some place and it was replenishing, it was fulfilling, and that it in some ways allowed you to go back out into the world. I don't see those sources as abundant as they once were.
Beautiful. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, Brad. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for joining me at Naging Now.
Thank you for having me.
That was Professor Brad Mapes-Martin at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. I'm Dr. Jayashree Chander, creator of Naging Now, a podcast about prioritizing well-being, on the web at neijingnow.org. Naging Now is independent and entirely listener-supported. If you enjoyed the clip, please share it with your friends. Like us on Facebook and donate generously. Your support is essential to keeping Naging Now alive.